Welcome to the Webster Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is implementation of new security features in Webster Message Broker version 6.1. Today's presenter is Rao Naduri. Rao has been working as L2 support engineer for about 3 years. In this position, he is responsible for handling all types of customer reported problems related to Webster Message Broker product. Prior to this position, he has extensive experience in AIX system administration and WebSphere and portal application support. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Rao.
Hi, everyone. Slide number 2. Today, I will initiate my today's presentation by briefly touching the security features of version 6.0, WebSphere Message Broker, and then I will go over some of the new features that version 6.1 got incorporated, especially the security as far as security is concerned. And then I will discuss how one can go about configuring these security features using LDAP. And thereafter, I'll take questions from you. Slide number 3, please. In WebSphere Message Broker 6.0, primarily the emphasis is on authorization to access the broker runtime resources, while ensuring that users who attempt to work with those resources have the necessary permissions to do so, like configuring a broker using MQSI change broker command, accessing queues of the message flows to put or get messages, or deploying a bar file to one of the execution groups of the broker, like publishing or subscribing to specific topics. ACL control lists like that are defined in the configuration manager determines which users or groups can view or modify the objects from the workbench command line or using configuration manager proxy. The message transport security involving SSL authentication for real-time nodes, HTTP listener, and WebSphere MQ client is also available with the message broker 6.0. The associated steps to configure these features have been well discussed in Info Center or some of the earlier WSDA discussions, presentations, and developer work articles. If anybody wants, I can forward them. With SSL transport security, the stream of data is passed between point to point and is protected in totality and is not differentiated for individual messages because typically all the data is encrypted. WebSphere Message Broker 6.1 do support all these features. Besides, it is now supporting message flow level security implementation. This allows identity-based control processing of the individual messages in the message flow. Slide number 4, please. WebSphere Message Broker 6.1 can be used as a policy enforcement point, PEP, for the service bus security with a lightweight directory server, LDAP, policy decision point, where the control and policy decisions in response to a request are taken. This slide illustrates the available security enforcement, that is PEP, and configuration repository, PDP, locations for a broker. The three input nodes of the message broker, MQ input node, HTTP input node, and SOAP input nodes, are the first point of contact for incoming messages. This is where the security profile can be configured to call the security manager. These input nodes act as the policy enforcement point for a message flow. And by unpacking the necessary attributes for the incoming message and making them available for the PDP entities for making the policy decisions, the policy set and policy bindings are repositories that need to be created on a broker to provide WS security and web services. The message broker provides web services support via SOAP nodes, and these nodes need to be configured with appropriate policy set and binding information to implement web services security. The LDAP and Tivoli Federated Identity Manager, TFIM, are supported by message brokers for this centralized security framework, and an LDAP server can be used for authentication and authorization. And TFIM can also be used for identity mapping as well. Next slide, number 5, please. Okay, this slide is just to differentiate the authorization, authentication, and identity mapping. The authentication is used to check the user identity, while the authorization is for making sure if the identity has appropriate authority to access the runtime resources of the broker. The identity mapping is for transforming the identity from one format or realm to an identity to another format or realm. The slide number 6, please. WebSphere message broker supports version 3 LDAP, like version 6.1 Tivoli directory server, Open LDAP, and Active directory servers, and also Tivoli Federated Identity Manager, TFIM. Up to the support pack 03 in version 6.1 release, the broker doesn't support some of the version 3 LDAP features like referrals in multi-domain environment or X509 tokens for LDAP authentication. Next slide, number 7, please. The new security manager in WebSphere Message Broker 6.1 can extract the identity from the input message and authenticate it within the broker purview instead of delegating it to the external agencies like Data Power or any other security managers. The security manager can generate a security profile that enables the message flows to take control of the individual message processing based on the message identity. Thus, creation of the security profile is the first step in implementation, and as this defines how the message flow handles its security processing activity. The security profiles can be created either by using the command line command, MQSI create configurable service, or from the security profiles window open from the domain view in the broker administrative perspective of the message broker toolkit. Next slide, number 8, please. The security profile, as I said, can be created using MQSI create configurable service command on the command line. Here the configurable service type C is the security profile, and the corresponding expected name of the service is either LDAP or TFIM. The properties of this service that identified with the flag minus N could be either authentication or authentication configuration, authorization, authorization config, and or mapping configure. The values of these properties are specified with beginning flag minus V. And the values for authentication authorization values could be LDAP or TFIM. And for the mapping, it can only be pick up TFIM. The corresponding config properties like authentication config, authorization config can have values like LDAP URL or TFIM's HTTP URL. And I will discuss about the syntax of the LDAP URL after going over a few more administrative commands useful for day-to-day administration. And meanwhile, I would like to emphasize one point here, is that LDAP URL is enclosed by escaped double quotes so that URL commas are not confused with the comma separator of the value parameters of the MQSI configurable service command. Let's go to the slide number 9. Using different administrative commands, one can display or modify the security profile properties or delete the security profile. Like MQSI delete configurable service command is useful for deleting the specified security profile from the broker. Using MQSI change properties command, one can modify the parameters like authentication, authorization, mapping, and their configuration settings, password values as well. Like if you would want them to be masked, obfuscated or masked, or keep it plain when the message travels through the message flow, and if you want to set the propagate true or false, also can be changed using MQSI change properties command. Using MQSI report commands, one can display the settings of different properties in either all or any specified security profile and use minus A instead of minus R in the end of MQSA report properties command, use the list of the security profiles instead of the properties. Go to the slide number 10. When creating a security profile using MQSAKit configurable service command, I mentioned earlier the LDAP server information is defined within the LDAP URL and specifies a search request sent to the LDAP server. The LDAP URL begins with LDAP or LDAP yes prefix, just like how we define URLs for HTTP, the name of the protocol. And then the host name or IP address of the LDAP server is the and its port, usually 389 for non-SSL communications. The LDAP base DN is the string defining the base distinguished name or starting point of the search within the LDAP hierarchy. If the set of users that will access the message flow are defined in different subtrees of the LDAP directory, then this will have to be specified as a common subtree node under which the LDAP server of the actual user name will uniquely resolve to the required user entry. In this case, the LDAP search scope must be set to sub. Here, there are some implications. Having all users that will access the message flow defined with a common base distinguished name will improve the efficiency since the LDAP search scope can be set to base and the overhead of the LDAP search can be avoided. I mean, however, we have to remember one thing is the broker security manager comes up with providing some cache. The LDAP UID attribute must be specified if an attribute other than UID, typically UID, CN, or email address, is being used in the DN. For example, if the user has a distinguished name, for example, CN is equal to test user 01, comma, OU is equal to department, and O is equal to IBM, and C is equal to US, then the LDAP UID attribute should be CN, would be configured. In case of LDAP group DN, the group DN provides a full unique DN for the broker security manager to obtain the group object that lists the users that are to be authorized for access to the message flow. The group member attribute can be used to specify the name of the attribute in the group object that forms the list of user DNs that are authorized. By default, the member and unique member are the member and unique member attributes will be searched. When the security profile is configured for both authentication and authorization, the user-based DN and the UID attributes are picked up from the authentication configuration information. However, when the security profile specifies only authorization, the full user DN will still be required when testing group membership so that the LDAP user extension, user-based DN, and UID attribute are needed and LDAP extension, user-based DN, and extension UID attributes have to be configured. Slide number 11, please. This slide describes how one can create the security profile for LDAP using administrative perspective in Toolkit. From the domain view, one can open the security profile window by selecting the option from the menu appear by right-clicking on the appropriate broker and click Add button to create the new profile. And then you can edit the name of the profile by pressing F2 button. Here, you can select the appropriate option for each of the profile properties that I already mentioned. The required LDAP parameter that needs to be entered are in the bottom of the window. Once you complete all the parameters, click Finish button, and then it should deploy the security profile to the broker. Once we create the security profile, we need to let the message broker know about it. Next slide, I will show that. Slide number 12, please. security profile can be configured either at a message flow level or at node level. At message flow level, one can enter its name in the security profile name property field on the Manage tab of Broker Archive Editor. And you can also do it using MQSI apply bar override command or by editing broker.xml deployment descriptor file. Slide number 13, please. The security manager extracts the identity information from the input message and saves it in the properties folder of the message tree structure. The identity types could be username or password or username plus password or X509 certificates. The values of these identities by default obtained from the transport headers. For example, MQ header can provide username from its user ID field, while HTTP header can carry user ID and password identity values. The WS security policy sets and bindings can be the source of the identity tokens for the SOAP nodes. Username and username and password tokens are supported for LDAP authentication and authorization, while TFIM supports username, username and password, and X509 certificate tokens for authentication and authorization, while username to username and X509 certificates to username are supported for identity mapping. The other mappings are, at this point, are not supported. Slide number 14. Here I would like to caution about the limitations of these transport headers for passing the identity values. For example, MQND header can only carry username token. User authentication purpose, we do need both user ID and password. So we cannot, in those scenarios, we cannot really rely on the headers. So the information has to be passed through the body of the message. Next slide, please. As you can see here, the username, password, and issued by identity token locations within the input XML message is defined in the appropriate property fields of the security tab of MQ input nodes using XPath coding. As you can see here, the identity information is held for type, token like username or certificate, password, and issued by properties. The type property defines the format of the token. Valid values are username, username and password, and X509 certificates. I'll discuss this when I'm going over with a specific example as well. Slide number 16, please. So thus far, we have seen how to create a security profile and incorporate it into the message flow, while after defining the identities either in the message header or body, and their location is made available to the input nodes of the message flow. Now, if the LDAP server allows the anonymous connections from the client, then broker can send a bind request to send username and password of the incoming identity for authentication or authorization of a user. However, if the LDAP server doesn't allow, in most of the cases it doesn't allow anonymous connections as I show in the slide, from the clients for binding, then one needs to configure the broker registry giving the details of an authorized DN username and password using MQSI set DB params command. Please note, in the command, a full DN of LDAP username has to be used. Instead of a specific LDAP server, one can also set for a general binding credentials applicable to all the servers as indicated. Next slide, please. The identity mapping can be configured with the federated identity manager using the custom module chain that uses identity issued by property value and the name of the message store. Expine of 509 certificate to username and username to username mappings are currently supported as I informed you already. I will discuss these details in a separate presentation. Next slide, please. Here I am going to show you how one can configure for user authentication and authorization, taking a simple example, simple message flow. The flow contains an MQ input node, a compute node, and an MQ output node. As a first step, we will create a base distinguished name that identifies the top entry of the hierarchy and few users. Slide number 19, please. Here is the Tivoli Directory Server 6.1 web admin tool. In the Tivoli Directory Server, in any other LDAP servers, before adding any users, one has to have first create the naming context for the distinguished name, the DN, that identifies the top entry in a locally held directory hierarchy. For example, here I created O is equal to IBM and C is equal to US. Slide number 20, please. Okay, once we have DN created, one can go ahead and keep adding users, groups, within a specified realm using a predefined user template. Test user 1, test user 2, and test user 3 are added and made the first two users part of the new group, WMB group. What it means is, if a particular runtime object is authorized to use only by WMB group, then test user 03 will not have access to that object, and a message sent by this user won't be able to process by the message flow. Slide number 21, please. As you can see here, the test user 01 is added to the INET ARG person object class as an e-person, and there is a user password defined for this user. And below that, you can see WMB group is generated as part of a group of names object class having two members, test user 01 and test user 02. Next slide, 22, please. Once the users that should be allowed to process the messages by the message flow are created, let's take a look at how we can make it work. If the values of the username and password identity tokens are defined within the body of the input message, then the XPath location of these identities have to be specified in the appropriate property fields on the security tab of MQ input node. The identity token types for the authentication should be set as username plus password. Coming to the compute node, one can enter the ESQL commands that would be helpful to obtain the expected output message. Here I added a couple of statements to see the current timestamp and hello message. For any of the test users that have entries in the LDAP server with a valid password value, if the username and password provided within the input message matches, then those users can see the output message that looks like I showed in the slide on the right-hand side bottom. Next slide, number 23, please. If you run a debugger on this flow, you can see the security manager extracts the identity information from the input message and saves it in the 8 properties in the properties folder of the message tree structure. These properties define two identities and the broker, the source and map. For both these identities, the values are held for type, token, password, and issued by properties. In the current example, you can see all the source identities are having values filled from the input message. If the user ID and password pair in the input message do not match with that stored in the LDAP server, then a security exception being thrown. Slide number 24, please. Security exceptions are processed in a slightly different way from other errors on the input node. While an error is caught in the input node and routed down to the failure terminal for error processing, by default, broker doesn't allow security exceptions to be caught within the flow, but backs the message out. This way, a security exception won't fill your logs. You can select the treat security exceptions as normal exceptions property on the input nodes. If you can check that, it will then these security errors also will be treated as any other errors. One other point that I would want to add here is that when you are collecting the traces to troubleshoot the security-related issues, use MQSA reload security command to clear the security cache. This ensures that the reason codes that return from the security provider but not from the cache are displayed in the trace exception. Coming back to the specifics of the VIP errors that we can notice in the broker logs like user.log or event logs, BIP 2728 reflects the failure occurs due to the binding-related issues, while BIP 2702 and BIP 2703 and BIP 2704 occurs from the authentication, authorization, and mapping failures. Next slide, please. Here I present some useful additional reference material, a Red Paper on new 6.1 feature, and Broker Info Center provides very valuable information, while the Red Book on the LDAP and the Info Center sites contains tons of additional information which might be helpful here. The next slide, please. This chart links to a number of sites that provide valuable online resources for WebSphere products, developer work, software, in-depth technical information. The events link on support pages points you to the webcast and conference information. And my support link on all product support pages lets you sign up for weekly email updates for products of interest to you. Next slide, please. Thanks for your attention, and I'm ready to take some questions from you. Over to you, Joseph Lam.
Thank you, Al, for a great presentation. At this point, David, we would like to open the line for questions.
And we do have a question from John Adigable.
The question is, when should one choose, say, for example, TFIM over Tivoli Directory Server as a choice? Does it just vary on what the requirements are?
Okay, the TDS, if you're doing only the authentication and authorization of users to access the message flow or the broker runtime objects or accessing the message flows to process the messages, then the TDS would be enough. But if you want to do any kind of transformations like, as I mentioned, the identity mappings from user to user or X509 tokens to the user, then you would need a TFIM. Otherwise, TDS should be fine.
I see. Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it appears we have no further questions at this time, and I'll turn the call back over to Joseph Lam for any additional comments or closing statements.
Thank you, David. At this time, we will conclude the presentation.